Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show. Afternoons on the Score.
Thanks for hanging out with the show. We've had a lot of laughs and a lot of fun so far today, and we will do more of that as we go. But many people in sports media, at least how I consume it nationally, are not really talking a lot about the Deshaun Watson allegations because they don't exactly seem like they know what to say, and it seems early to have really strong definitive, or at least it seemed early to have really strong definitive opinions one way or another. And they've been civil complaints, not criminal, and his reputation was what it was. But you guys know what I have said about Deshaun Watson. I mean, he's my favorite player in the league, and of course I wanted the Bears to have him, and yeah, I was willing to trade my dog for him. And then the next day these charges have been filed. So you guys keep tweeting me or texting, you know, the show, hey, what do you think about this development? Or, hey, come on, Parkins, you going to defend your guy now? And it's like, man, no, I'm not defending this. He looks like either a criminal or a sicko or maybe both. Like, this looks awful for him, man. And speak since the last time we've talked about it, a couple of things have happened today, maybe being the most noteworthy and damaging, in that Ashley Solis has made the allegation public with her name on it and held a press conference today.
So that becomes personal and public and emotional and directly relatable and hearable for the public in a completely different way.
Well, and no longer anonymous, right? Yep. Like so many of these civil complaints, understandably, right, you're protected under the law, and there's been like an anonymity that has been granted there. But one of the things that Deshaun Watson's side has been like, we want to learn who these alleged victims are so we can vet them and see what was going on. But before we get to that, because there was just a very explosive press conference today with the plaintiff's lawyer, Tony Busby, and then this alleged victim, Ashley Solis, but did you see last week what Deshaun Watson's first, what his legal team's first defense was?
Yeah, the Rusty Hardin had thrown together. Yeah, explain it to people. Give people the full context.
It was, they basically came out and said, there's a bunch of allegations against Deshaun Watson. They're anonymous, so we don't know who they are. But here are 18 masseuses by name who have done work with Deshaun Watson that are willing to say on the record with their name that their interactions with him were strictly professional. And, yo, Deshaun Watson, the fetishizing of massages, like if that's your best legal defense, that, hey, I think at the time it was 19 have alleged that I did something wrong. Here's 18 that had no problem with what I've done. Man, it's not normal for him to have 37 different people who have given him massages.
Right.
Like when the team employs masseuses, physical therapists. He can afford the best and the most qualified. Like, he's flying people in from all different states and the whole thing. Like, if the best defense was, see, not every time they ended up in a complaint, like, he has a serious problem on his hands here. And that defense, combined with the press conference today and the NFL statement of, we're monitoring these deeply disturbing allegations. Because one of the things, and we talked about this at the beginning, was we didn't know, there hadn't been precedent for the commissioner's office to use the commissioner's exempt list without criminal charges.
Yeah.
Right? It had been used like in the Ray Rice case, mm-hmm. in Greg Hardy, stuff like that. Now there is a criminal investigation, yes, at least, that's happening.
Yeah, if anybody missed that, there is a criminal inquiry. A complainant filed a report with the Houston Police Department over the weekend, and the Houston Police Department is conducting an investigation. So you do have that added in. Although, I said it last time, I don't think that Roger Goodell will need a criminal component to act in terms of suspension or discipline if he thinks it's warranted.
You know, So, I got to be honest with you. I don't know that he's playing football this year. Like, this is, there's so many of them, mm-hmm. now, that if it reaches the point where he gets put on the commissioner's exempt list, which would basically be paid leave, right?
Yeah.
But then he can only come off of that list once this runs its course legally.
And if he's going to defend himself, this is not running its course legally by November.
That's what I'm saying. Exactly right. So he will either have two choices. He will either have to settle.
Yeah.
But there's a criminal investigation, so it might not just be money anymore.
And if you're settling, that will certainly be perceived as an admission of some form of guilt, which will be enough to act on, perhaps, for the commissioner in that case.
Exactly. So I think the combination of, if that's the best initial legal defense he can muster, with the sheer volume of allegations and now the potential component of a criminal charge or charges, or at least investigation coming into Deshaun Watson, man, I'm not sure if he's playing football this year. And obviously that's not nearly as significant as the criminal component of this, obviously. But just from the news cycle portion of it, it really does change the entire complexity of the offseason. And I think we've seen it in some of the aggressiveness with these moves of teams, mm-hmm. moving up in the draft and the like trades happening earlier and earlier. Like, we talked about it. Like, you were like, no, he's getting traded. John McClain, the beat writer for the Texans, was like, they're trading him. They have to trade him. Then this came out. Forget the fact that they can't trade him. He might not play for anybody for a long, long time.
I think that is absolutely on the table, and I'd have to say that I will be surprised, frankly, if he's playing football when the season begins. The NFL commented today, Brian McCarthy.
Yeah, their spokesperson.
Their vice president of communications said that, quote, the allegations are deeply disturbing and we take these issues very seriously. This is in a statement to Pro Football Talk, apparently. Immediately following news of the first allegations last month, and as has been reported, we initiated an investigation under the NFL's personal conduct policy. We are continuing to closely monitor all developments in the matter. So they're going to want to be involved and have a say and make a judgment of some kind here at some point. And the volume of this stuff, it just looks absolutely awful. At a very minimum, he sexualized massage to uncomfortable levels and paid no attention to the discomfort of a lot of the masseuses.
Well,
at a minimum, that's where we are.
Right.
Minimum.
Well, and he, right, and sexualized massages to a great number of masseuses who were professional masseuses.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it, not like the, that is a service that can be found, you know, some places legal, some places, most places not. But you know what I mean? It's not like they came there under the understanding of it would be a massage plus. It was just like he would just like see what happened. And it's definitely seems criminal, honestly. And we'll see where it goes, and we'll see how much the evidence comes from all of these allegations. But here's what happened today. We're going to play two clips from this press conference, because the more that this happens, we talked a lot about, right, like the public pressure on the league when people saw what happened with Ray Rice, right? The video, it just, the country, the discourse. I think that this alleged victim, Ashley Solis, coming forward, she does this press conference, and here's what she said both happened and what's happened to her since her interaction with Deshaun Watson.
I am a survivor of assault and harassment. Deshaun Watson is my assaulter and my harasser. Deshaun Watson assaulted and harassed me on March 30th, 2020, in my own home, doing what I love most. Massage therapy.
In her own home. It's a lot of times these people will make appointments and have athletes come to their home, and she feels assaulted in her own house doing what she loves the most.
And then there was a victim letter that Tony Busby, the lawyer for the alleged victims, the plaintiffs in this case, read at this press conference. So that was one of, I believe, the only victim still to this point to go public with her name. I apologize if there's been another one, but this is from an alleged victim who has not put her name publicly, but did issue a statement that Tony Busby read at this press conference.
And as I attempted to start the session, you clearly directed me away from a therapeutic glute massage toward your anus. Every boundary from professional and therapeutic to sexual and degrading, you crossed or attempted to cross. You insisted that I not use my knuckles or forearms, but that I use my fingers for digital stimulation, which is an ethical violation of massage practice when working in the gluteal area.
So that, I apologize, not read by Tony Busby, but one of the co-lawyers. The female lawyer on the case. But so, I mean, that's... those are the types of allegations that he is facing, and now they're no longer words on a page in a, you know, court of official courthouse records. Now you're going to actually have
sound bites
and faces and tears and all of that. And he is in a world of trouble, man.
Yeah, there's a commonality to the charges or the allegations in the civil suits too, where he keeps talking about the glutes. Do you work on the glutes? Will you come up here and work on the glutes? Like it's a code and an expectation. And then it's a brutal portrayal of a dude's apparent sense of entitlement that led to just a rash of behavior. It's so super disappointing. In terms of him and what we've all thought of him and watched of him, it is super sad for all those women, all those massage therapists who clearly, some of them greatly affected emotionally in terms of what they do for a living. Just brutal.
So, I mean, but think about that, man. Like, the best legal defense so far that Deshaun Watson could muster up, his high-profile lawyer, Rusty Hardin, right? The Roger Clemens lawyer, hugely popular celebrity, high-priced lawyer in the state of Texas, is, oh, yeah? We have massage therapists who say it was fine with Deshaun Watson.
Yeah.
You know, that's not how it works.
Yeah. Look at all these people he didn't kill.
Yeah.
He went to a lot of parties and talked to people and didn't kill any of them at these parties.
It is... It is not going well for him.
What would have happened if the Texans had raced to accept a trade, or had just simply decided, you know what, yeah, and had accepted a trade from the Jets for 3 ones and a 2 and Sam Darnold 2 months ago? What would have happened?
I mean, you wouldn't undo the trade. Like, the league office couldn't undo it.
The Jets could push, and, or a team could push and say that the Texans knew this stuff was coming and dealt in bad faith.
If you could prove that the Texans knew, sure. And then that would just complicate it and make it a way bigger football story as well. And it's already a huge football story, obviously. But I don't know, man. Like, I see like some people on the text line being like, maybe Ryan Pace knew and it's why he didn't take him out to dinner. Stop. Like, no. That is, there's no evidence that people knew about that. And I don't even think, do we even have any that have gone back more than 18 months? Or is it, or 2 years is the furthest it goes back? You know what I mean? In terms
I don't believe so.
I don't think that, I think that is a very weird desire to vindicate Ryan Pace for his 2017 draft prep, which is just not necessary.
There's a lot of people going down that road, by the way. There's a lot of people who've gone down that road to validate Pace, and I don't know if they're doing it to troll in these conversations now, or if they actually believe it, or they're trying to minimize the truism that this GM the Bears have is really bad at evaluating quarterbacks.
Yeah, so I mean, there's no evidence or no reason to believe Ryan Pace knew about this prior to 2017, and he was just the smartest man in the room with regards to Deshaun Watson. There's no indication of that. But there is every indication now that Deshaun Watson is a sexual predator and fetishizes massages and is in deep, deep, deep trouble. We'll see if his legal defense team can come up with something better. And obviously, we do not know all of the facts yet. So all of these things are right now just allegations. But damn, it does not look good at all for Deshaun Watson. The fourth pick in the draft is up for debate and up for auction, if you will. And there's talk of the Bears being one of the teams interested in trading up to it. And, well, I don't think that's going to happen, but also a quarterback that y'all love to hate just keeps coming off really, really likable. It's Parkinson Spiegel on the Score.
You mentioned a bit about evaluating the quarterback differently. I'm wondering if that mindset comes from having to move on from Mitch, someone that you obviously moved up in the draft to get, someone you really had a lot of high hopes for, and then realizing that that didn't work out.
Yeah, you know, I think, again, Deion, you learn from every one of these things, and the draft's not an exact science. We know that. And, you know, I think there's so many variables involved in this. You know, there's so many things that happen when you draft a player. And I think, yeah, again, you do learn from it. And I think, you know, we're the different staff now. Again, I think we're very connected to our coaches on what we're looking for. There's multiple ways to attack all these positions, not just quarterback. And that's what we're working through right now.
That's Ryan Pace. Reportedly, the Atlanta Falcons are interested or open for business on the fourth pick in the draft. We know Trevor Lawrence is going one to Jacksonville. The Jets traded Sam Darnold to Carolina. So it seems like Zach Wilson is all but guaranteed to go two to the Jets. The Niners traded Hall to move up to three. Presumably, according to a lot of reports, for Mac Jones, which is crazy to me.
It is so crazy.
Absolutely
insane.
That
they felt they had to move to you think they had to move to three to get it? You really, if that's the target, I can't imagine that they had to move to three, but I guess you don't know. If you're going to move to eight, you might as well move to three. What's another first-round pick?
Well, if he's your guy as a franchise quarterback, I would agree with that statement. Yeah. But if he's not, the logic does seem a little faulty to me that it's like, you know, he won with Kirk Cousins, so he wants to get another guy who profiles out to be Kirk Cousins. It's like, well, he didn't win a Super Bowl with him. And
if you can win with that guy, then go ahead and win with Jimmy Garoppolo and save all your freaking picks and build your team.
Well, or just because he has won with a limited quarterback doesn't mean he wants to. Like, you know, if you could win with Kirk Cousins, what could he do with Trey Lance or Justin Fields or whatever? So I'm a little surprised by that, but we'll see. But let's just say, for the sake of argument here, for the sake of discussion, that...
Oh, I love the Danny "for the sake of discussion" preface. I do like it. Bring it, baby. Bring it.
Okay. So premise one is, yes, or assumption one is, Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, and Mac Jones are off the board 1, 2, 3. Assumption 2 is Ryan Pace is willing to trade a lot for a franchise quarterback, as evidenced by moving up from 3 to 2 to get Mitch Trubisky, and as evidenced by the reported offer for Russell Wilson. So my question to you, Spiegs, is...
Yes, sir.
Let's say that the Bears have graded Trey Lance or Justin Fields as a franchise-caliber guy. Do you think Ryan Pace is in a position to make a similar offer that he was willing to make for Russell Wilson to the Atlanta Falcons to move up from 20 to number 4?
This is a scenario that I started to play out in my head after that press conference, and we learned that they had successfully sold the McCaskey family on their updated vision of quarterback, and we're going to get a chance to have everything on the table as they redid the quarterback room with Matt Nagy emboldened. Yeah, I think they could do whatever the hell they want. In terms of ownership, that part of it, I'm convinced that ownership is all aboard the Pace and Nagy train of whatever you guys think. And if that includes trading up for into the top 5 for a quarterback after you traded up for a quarterback last time and had a colossal bust and you can be the first GM to get to do it twice, then I think Ryan Pace will be allowed to do that twice. So that's the first part, is I think he has ownership's complete and overall blessing on that kind of thing.
I tend to agree with you. Like, why employ the guy if you're not going to let him do his job for this year?
Correct.
The Niners traded 3 first-round picks to move up from 12 to 3, right? They traded the 12th pick and 2 future firsts plus a third to move up 9 spots in the draft. But the 3rd overall pick, obviously more valuable than the 4th overall pick. I would be a little surprised if the Bears were willing to trade anything similar to what they were willing to trade for Russell Wilson for the 4th quarterback in this draft. I'd be a little surprised just because... If they have to win now, are you really willing to give up that many assets for a guy who, by no accounts, or it's very rare where a rookie quarterback can come in and be great. It's happened a little bit more recently, right? Justin Herbert was great immediately. Joe Burrow was very good before he got hurt. But it would surprise me a bit if they were willing to do that. But what I think is in play is now that Carolina has traded for Sam Darnold, don't you think it is likely that they are not taking a quarterback? And if they are not taking a quarterback, then it feels like if a quarterback does drop into a range where the Bears could reasonably afford to trade up, maybe just a future first-round pick, right? We'll give you the 20th overall pick and our first-round pick next year to move up from 20 to, say, 12, or 20 to, say, 8 or 10 to draft the 4th or 5th quarterback in the draft. That is a scenario where I could see it happening if the Bears actually grade Trey Lance or Justin Fields as a franchise guy. I do think that feels like something Ryan Pace would do.
Oh, God.
Because it wouldn't cost the starters that it would cost to get Russell Wilson. It wouldn't cost 5 players, you know what I mean? Or the equivalent of 5 players between picks and players. It would cost an extra pick or 2 to move up 8 or 10 spots.
I think the overwhelming favorite in my mind is your nightmare quarterback room scenario, where it's a day 2 quarterback or even a day 3 quarterback that Kellen Mond, you know, or Kyle Trask, or whichever one they fall in love with. And there's no guarantee that those guys make it out of the first round, frankly, the way that this whole thing is going. That it's an overwhelming favorite in my mind that one of those guys is who ends up being added to the mix. But certainly, it's possible. It is absolutely possible, and they can sell ownership on whatever, and I could see Pace saying, well, we're not giving up as much as we would have for a true proven franchise guy. But I think that the overwhelming favorite is the first scenario, because they do have to win now. So the shortest distance between here and winning now is Andy Dalton being decent with a revamped, you know, with the revamped offensive line they found. That's the easiest route to get to be decent and to therefore keep your job. Did you happen to read Shialkopedia on The Athletic today?
No.
He used Jason Fitzgerald from overthecap.com. People look at SpotTrack or they look at Over the Cap. And you know, in trying to help figure out what every team in the NFL, Danny, what their direction is at the quarterback position based on how they're spending money, what their allotments are, which way they're going in terms of those contracts. And let me just give you this from Jason Fitzgerald and from Shialkopedia over at The Athletic. The Bears might be the NFL's best example right now of an organization with no plan.
Great.
Their moves reflect a GM and a coach who are simply trying to keep the team competitive to save their jobs. And it's not just quarterback they look at. They're looking at Allen Robinson, and they signed Andy Dalton, and how they released Kyle Fuller, replaced him with Desmond Trufant. And then Jason Fitzgerald from Over the Cap says this: it's just a mess. There's nobody they can get at quarterback, so I get why they went after Dalton. Why they went after Dalton at 10.5 mil. Who are you going to lose him to? I just don't see the purpose of that at all. The Robinson stuff has made no sense at all. There's no reason to have him on the tag. You either get a long-term extension done or you let him walk. I don't get it. I don't get anything they're doing at this point. There's
a salary cap.
Yeah, salary cap analysis of the beloved Bears.
Yeah, it's not good. I just and I agree that the most likely outcome after the Dalton scenario is draft a quarterback in the second, third, or fourth round and try to win this year and revisit conversations for Russell Wilson and hope that things get ugly in Seattle because you at least have their attention and he seems to at least have somewhat of eyes for you. Mm-hmm. So I still do think that's the most likely thing. But when Atlanta sees, oh my God, Zach Wilson's going two, yeah, and now Mac Jones is going three, so Justin Fields, who for a huge percentage of the college football season, like actually on the film, the game tape, the caliber of opponents, Justin Fields is going to be on the board at four, and he just ran a sub 4.5 40, by the way. So he's got some wheels. They're like, wait a minute, we have the guy who for the vast majority of the college football season was seen as the second overall pick in the draft. All of a sudden, he's sitting there for us at four, and the Niners got three first-round picks, two additional ones, for Mac Jones. What could we get for Justin Fields if a team still has Justin Fields graded as the second-best quarterback in the draft? Like, I do think it is potentially relevant for the Bears because that guy for a long time was considered the second best quarterback. Because we have a texter saying, trading a future first for the fifth best quarterback in the draft is moronic. Not if you have him graded as the second best quarterback in the draft. Right? I mean, it's like, just, everybody is going to have all of these guys, Trevor Lawrence 1, Zach Wilson 2, Mac Jones 3, Justin Fields 4, Trey Lance 5. Not every team is going to have their big board be the exact same.
I'm left hoping that Matt Nagy has the most influence in that evaluation room in terms of quarterback. I'm left praying that that's the case. Because
yeah,
no matter what they do, whether they just take somebody in the second or third round, or if unbelievably enough, if they did trade assets to go up and take number five, the idea that Ryan Pace is the one weighing in with input on that is just horrific to even consider. It really is.
I get it. I'm not saying anyone has to like it or be comfortable. You have one of the three worst quarterback situations in the entire damn league, but that series of events, the second best quarterback potentially being available at four,
mm-hmm,
and Carolina now being out of the running for a quarterback. Like, if Justin Fields falls in this draft and Matt Nagy says, no, that's the second or third best QB in this draft, they are going to move up to get him if he falls to a certain point. I just don't know what that point is. If it's four, if it's eight, if it's 12, you know what I mean? Like, I have no idea. But if they love Justin Fields, that is the exact type of thing that they would do. And remember, when Matt Nagy answered Hub's question about what ideal traits are in a quarterback, process things quickly, strong arm, mobility's a plus. Justin Fields checks those boxes.
Mm-hmm.
He's a very good athlete who was in a pro-style offense, won a bunch in college, and obviously can move. So he does check the boxes in theory of what Matt Nagy would like if they like him. I have no idea if he likes him or not, but Justin Fields could be falling in this draft, and the Bears, we know, are willing to put together in a very aggressive package to move up.
What would you give up for, you know, it's not going to happen now that you have Dalton. But, you know, I'd rather have Matt Ryan than Dalton, but I suppose Dalton just cost money. I'd rather not have either of them. That would really be my preference.
Yeah, yeah.
To not go down that road at all.
Matt Ryan's a statue at this point, and he's, what, 36? Like, so that's not a long-term answer. I do think that it's likely that he's better than Andy Dalton next year. But like you said, you'd have to give up draft picks in order to get him.
I think Matt Ryan's had like the third worst quarterback record or second worst quarterback record since 2017 in the NFL.
He has not been the same since losing Kyle Shanahan, even with Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley and playing in a dome. So I agree. I think Matt Ryan is approaching cooked, and he is a statue back there. So I would not sign off on giving up anything of significance.
Would you call him a cooked Matty Rice?
No. But you just did. How do you feel about it?
Not as good as I did going in.
Yeah. I can see it.
Oof. Yikes. Really?
Took a swing.
Yeah, I did.
You took a swing?
Yeah.
I appreciate it. I like it. I like when you take swings.
It's like Luis Robert swinging at a slider, though.
Oh.
Drew that walk last night, though.
Plate discipline. It's developing.
Tanny holding on to the walk. Hey, Tanny, why does Nick Madrigal end up in some of the ugliest and weirdest defensive plays I've ever seen every week?
Funny you mentioned that, Speaks, because when he came out of college, his defensive skills were highly touted, and his baseball acumen. That's what they try to tell us.
It's all about the
him.
Baseball acumen with this guy.
Except he can't stop running into prospective outs. You know, yes. He gets lucky that he did Sunday night, you know, not running into an out. Yeah, and then the glove has not done wonders. You know, I remember the postseason where he's, you know, not obeying his third base coach's sign. So, he's not a fan favorite with a large sect of White Sox fandom.
Well, because if you're that guy, you need to have pristinely wonderful baseball instincts and cost your team in no other ways. And that's not what we're getting so far.
But some of these high-profile picks are going to miss, right? That's just...
Well, the funny thing is, like, he won a college gold glove, and that's one thing, like, you know, that should translate over, the glove aspect of it. You know, I get it if a guy rakes in college and then can't hit at the big league level. We've seen that before. I get that, Zach Collins. But, you know, I you would think that certain things would carry over. Like, he's hit. That's the funny thing. He's hit like they thought they would. Like, you know, you could debate the logistics and the thought process of taking a singles hitter in the first round. But, you know, if that part has seemed to be correct, that he's going to hit, but the other stuff is just, dude, what are you doing, man?
It just seems like he's overwhelmed and has a very low baseball IQ right now. That overload.
Which sometimes
almost.
Is pressing. I heard pressing. Lawrence bring that up. Like, I could see that
I
being pressing a bit.
I keep going there because it is a college gold glove winner, and it is somebody who should know how to run the bases, but he's trying real hard to do a whole lot on that team.
It's just easy to come out and say, oh, Nick Madrigal sucks. Not doing that yet. A lot of other people are doing that. Not doing that yet.
He has a 118 career at-bats. So, yeah, it'd be very premature to say that he sucks. But
people do it.
But what he's been billed as is not what he's been, which is fair. But he's 23 years old. So plenty of time for him, but yeah, it's maddening when the profile of the guy is not at all what you're seeing with your eyes, especially because he doesn't make up for it with the occasional ball over the wall.
And it's made worse by your teammates making a Mr. 3000 t-shirt of you in the spring training. A
lot of hype.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, probably. There was a really cool story that came out this morning about Ethan Katz and his work with Carlos Rodon. Danny, that's super instructive in terms of what effect Katz is already having on this whole staff, and Carlos Rodon especially, who looked awesome last night.
I You said that there's a story out there right now about it?
It's small. It's that Rodon has never thrown a curveball in a game before. Never in a game before. StatCast has never measured a Rodon pitch and said, oh, yeah, that's a curveball. It's always slider. But now StatCast is calling these like 74-mile-an-hour pitches sliders, and those are not sliders. Those are curveballs. And Katz found a curveball that Carlos Rodon threw in a spring session and said, oh, yeah, that's perfect. Let's use that one for a dump-in pitch and get somebody to see one less slider. That works for that. So it's just like he said to Rodon, just use that a little bit, maybe 8%. So it's in a scouting report, and teams have to honor that. And so they see the slider less often. And all of a sudden now, Rodon is throwing curveballs, just a little, but he's throwing some, even though StatCast isn't saying it is. And he's been throwing the change. All of a sudden, he's a four-pitch guy after being a bread-and-butter fastball slider guy who was trying to work the changeup in. Now he's a four-pitch mix guy that opponents have to prepare for in a completely different way. Really, really cool, simple little intuitive find by Ethan Katz and suggestion.
He looked really good early last night, and they could certainly use him as a member of the back end of that rotation. Coming up, quarterback y'all love to hate continues to come off real likable in a big Cubs headline at 5 o'clock on The Score.
Feels good to win. Scotch tastes better, as it always does.
So Aaron Rodgers debuted on Jeopardy yesterday. We read you the quote of him saying he wants the job full time. And Shane thought it wasn't likable. Speaks and I thought it was pretty cool. A level of honesty from him and just not your typical post-career for a future Hall of Fame quarterback. So we went through the episode to bring you some of the best. We have an incredible troll, an all-time drop, and a genuine moment. We'll start with the genuine moment, Speaks. This is how Aaron Rodgers, quarterback of the Green Bay Packers, introduced the show, his first, as the host of Jeopardy.
And now, here is the guest host of Jeopardy, Aaron Rodgers.
Thank you, Johnny Gilbert. Welcome to Jeopardy. As a lifelong fan of Jeopardy, it is an incredible honor to guest host. Now, I've had the opportunity to do a lot of amazing things, but winning Celebrity Jeopardy and getting to share the stage with the legend Alex Trebek is something I will never forget. Alex was such a gentleman, so smart, so precise. I was in awe, and I will work hard to honor his legacy.
It's pretty cool. I asked the question yesterday, Danny. The category was former NFL players who hosted game shows, and we got to Mike Adamly and Larry Zonka with American Gladiator, Rolf Benerschke with the daytime version of Wheel of Fortune. Michael Strahan did a couple of shows recently. Fran Tarkenton, that's incredible, if that counts. Although that's not really a game show, so it doesn't count. And I'm told DeMarcus Ware hosted the reboot of Battle of the Network Stars. So
okay.
There's that. Asked and answered.
All right.
Appreciate it.
I was waiting to pay off that tease from yesterday for the full list. Here is the troll. It was absolutely brilliant by one of the contestants.
Category for final today is daytime TV personalities. And a clue. Accepting a Lifetime Achievement Emmy, he said, just take 10 seconds to think of the people who have helped you become who you are. Over to our two-day champion on the end. Scott, did you come up with the correct response? Who wanted to kick that field goal? That is a great question. Should be correct, but unfortunately for this game today, that's incorrect, and you're going to lose 0. Thank you for that, and congrats on your 2-day win streak.
It's really good.
That is amazing.
Really good. The problem for Aaron Rodgers' career is that could have been referring to either his current coach or his past coach.
Yeah, you thought it was McCarthy in an old field goal. Turns out it's Matt LaFleur in this most recent field goal. But this has chased Aaron a little bit.
Yeah, I immediately go to the Mike McCarthy 2 field goals inside the 3-yard line against the Seahawks of the NFC Championship game, which was when I really fully started to hate Mike McCarthy. But yes, there is a much more recent and topical example, and I will try to be updating my references. But here we go, Speaks. The potential for an all-time drop from Aaron Rodgers' debut as the host of Jeopardy.
Brandon Deutsch in the middle from Long Beach, California, a student. He took the Jeopardy test during a concert. What concert was this?
Yeah, so I actually went to Berklee for college too, Aaron, and in my senior year there, I really wanted to qualify for the college championship, but it was for the same time as this concert my friends and I were really excited for, the online test. But I thought, why not do both? So flash forward, and I'm on the floor of this huge concert hall in San Francisco, sandwiched in between 5,000 sweaty people, and I'm getting bumped around, but in the middle of it, I'm typing feverishly on my phone, who is King Lear? I didn't make it on, but you know, it all washed out because now I'm here. So
yeah, baby, go Bears.
Yeah,
yeah.
Oh, there it is.
That's real clean.
That's the gold. That's worth Aaron Rodgers' entire investment in Jeopardy. Is go Bears.
Yeah, sure. Don't let the details get in the way of the good drop where he's referring to the Cal Bears, the Golden Bears. But yeah, go Bears. Aaron Rodgers.
Go Bears.
Go Bears.
Oh, come on now. We got Aaron Rodgers doing that to go with a frozen Ditka, right? It's perfect.
I'm just saying, if Brett Favre ended up playing for the Vikings, maybe that's our answer for the first 4,000-yard passer in Bears history. It'll be Aaron Rodgers in 4 years.
Oh, go Bears.
Oh, that's freaking glorious.
Go Bears.
Go Bears!
Go Bears.
Yeah.
That is glorious. I can't wait for Packers week now. Isn't today Packers week, by the way? Did I read that this
the
morning?
The Bulls play the Packers tonight on WBBM.
Yeah. Thank you to our boss.
That's very inside radio.
The worst speller in communications.
So. He's legendary. I mean, he's a terrific boss and a master of radio stamina and just the worst speller that there's ever been. So Bulls-Packers, I believe they tip off around 5:45 over there on WBBM.
Yeah. We still don't know what sport they're playing, but we do know the Bulls are playing the Packers
all
tonight.
Staff Hockey. Email.
Hockey, I believe, is the answer.
So is Aaron Rodgers any good there? What do you think? Do we like that?
Yeah.
He sounds like Ace Rothstein in Ace's Eye. My first guest is Frankie Avalon.
Sounds like Tony La Russa.
Yeah, a little stiff. It's got to lighten up a little bit.
With some scotch.
Yeah, but it is a stuffy show.
Thanks, Tanny, for the setup there. How about the sound that Tanny brings in, Aaron Rodgers talking about scotch and how great this scotch tastes? Scotch guys think they're better than you. A whiskey guy is just like, I'm just going to have some whiskey. Scotch guys, outside of what Spieg's got me, the Oban, phenomenal.
No,
but I don't go around talking about being a Scotch guy. Guys who do that think they're better than you.
I am guilty of some liquor elitism when it comes to Scotch. I will own that. I will own that. I'm prone to that in general. I was a music elitist for a lot of years before it got smacked out of me. And now I would just want people to like whatever the hell they like. But in terms of Scotch, you're right. I like a very particular kind of flavor profile, and I think my scotch is better than your whiskey and your bourbon.
Yeah.
I absolutely believe that.
Usually it is, but your scotch is $100, my bourbon's like $35. That's the difference here between you and I, unfortunately.
$65. Yeah.
I'm just gonna enjoy a nice glass of scotch tonight.
Little defensiveness from the bourbon guy over there, and Speaks, you could have left out, I'm a little bit of an alcohol elitist. You're a baseball elitist, too. You're just kind of an elitist.
It's possible.
Yeah.
It's possible.
All right, there is a very, explosive headline out there about a prominent Chicago Cub. And is it as damaging as the headline suggests it is? We'll get into it next on The Score.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.